Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, will join us this afternoon to answer all of your questions about your feline and canine companions, mainly dogs and cats. But if perhaps your Wolverine is acting lethargic, give him a try. You never know. It's Pets and Vets today. And to ensure your spot on this popular program, I advise you to call now. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Again, it's a call-in show. We like calls. 800-348-2551, Pets and Vets today. Dr. Ron Scharf is here, and we start the show right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon, and here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell with extensive background in veterinary medicine, as you might imagine. Dr. Scharf, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Ray. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. The summer going all right?
Summer's going great. It's busy.
Good.
That's what I go to work for, help animals, and it's going good.
You look rested, tan. Things are all right.
Yeah, too much raking.
Ah, well, you can pay people to do that. You know. The number to call, or I try to get my kids to do it. It never works out. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. The Pets and Vets programs tend to be very popular, so you might want to call in early while we have a couple of open lines. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. If you do email, remember, we can't do a follow-up question, so provide as much information as you can, your pet's age and sex and the malady that you are inquiring about.
Malady.
Yeah. You see?
Good one.
And we'll probably run out of time for email about 2:40 or so. So if you want to email, do it early. And again, the number is 800-348-2551. All right, you ready?
Let's go.
You'll need headphones.
Oh, yeah.
You got to put them on. Okay, here we go. Matt and Troy, you're on. Matt.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a 5-year-old Havanese. She's about 8 pounds. She's very gentle. She doesn't chew on any of those dental sticks, and her breath is terrible. What do you suggest might help us out, you know, so that she can give us kiss-ins without it being so disgusting?
Matt, you've hit upon my number one important topic that I talk to all my clients about every day of my career, and that is dental health. That dogs should not have dog breath, okay? Everyone thinks that they ought to, but it's only because they haven't brushed their teeth in a while or ever, and they have periodontal disease. 85% of dogs over the age of 3 have some degree of periodontal disease. Some have more than others. It's like people. Some people get more periodontal disease than others, but the fact of the matter is, even if they were brushing their teeth every day, which most dogs don't, like us, we are recommended to have our teeth cleaned twice a year at the hygienist. So even if they were brushing every day, they would need attention in terms of dental prophylaxis, which is a dental cleaning. They feel like $1 million, and sometimes the odor, Matt, could be from something more than just that they need cleaning, and even more than that they have periodontal disease. They might have a broken tooth, or they might have something stuck in there, a foreign body. I've seen that before. I once had someone come in a bunch of years ago for a routine well exam. I open the mouth, and I see a bottle cap lodged
Ouch.
In the roof of the dog's
oh
mouth.
Oh, my God.
And it had been there for a while. Now, I'm not saying, Matt, that your girl has a bottle cap.
Right.
At 8 pounds, she probably wouldn't fit it anyway. But yearly exams, including oral exam, dental exam, is very important. And I'm betting that breath would go away totally if she had her teeth cleaned.
All right, Matt, thank you. But just to be clear, you don't recommend people kiss dogs anyway, right?
That is the case, that I do not recommend that dogs lick people's faces.
Yes.
Or if they do. See, I don't prevent my patients from licking my face, but I wash my face immediately afterwards, okay? Because they can carry stuff that can cause us a problem. I mean, the most common digestive tract worms, roundworms and hookworms, can be transmitted to people by getting kissed.
Yeah. Okay,
but even if you don't have a wound, you can get it.
Well, frightening. Let's go to, wrong button there, Uncle Ray. Let's go to Kim in Oneonta. Kim, you're on.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was wondering where New York State stands in getting laws making it illegal to declaw cats, and who's the best person to write? I'll ask the question, and then I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Splendid. Thank you.
Okay, so that is a very interesting question, Kim, especially as I will, in full disclosure, say that I'm involved with the New York State Veterinary Medical Society on what they call their our government relations program, and we take up situations like this. And it is not a law in New York State. It is not illegal to declaw a cat. And the New York State Society stands in opposition to it becoming a law because it removes the decision that ought to be appropriately made by the veterinarian rather than by the legislature. And I'll tell you a couple of instances why. You could have people that say it's an older woman who has lost her spouse of 50 years or 60 years, and the cat is the only thing she has left, her only companion. She's homebound. And then she gets some kind of condition, or she gets a sickness in which she needs to be on chemotherapy. So in other words, she has an immune complex problem, an immunosuppression problem, either from the medication or from a disease. And so the only way for her doctor to allow her to have a cat is if she will not be able to get scratched.
Uh-huh.
So that could be a life or death issue for the cat as well as the person. If the cat does not get declawed and it's too old to be adoptable, or the shelters won't take it, or they won't, or no one wants to adopt that cat can get euthanized. Similarly, if the person gets scratched by that cat with claws, and those claws had been in the litter box or whatever, it could be a disastrous consequence for that person as well. So we think that there are some narrow situations in which declawing is a necessary evil, shall I say. We use pain medication. We use anti-inflammatories. It is something which I can't say it's painless, but if you do it right and use the right medications, then 5 or 10 days later, they're all healed up, and it's like nothing ever happened. And I've done them before, and I'll do them again because I do think that there are situations in which it is definitely called for. I do think that it should not be done with a cavalier attitude, Kim. I think that there are definitely situations in which it's inconvenient for the owner for the cat to have claws, in which case I agree. I agree that it should be restricted, that those situations might not justify the surgery of doing the declawing.
Okay, but if somebody is dead set on having their cat declawed and Ron Scharf says, you know what, I don't think this is ethical, there's no need for this, that person could just go to another vet.
They could go to another vet. That's true. They could also go to a shelter, drop the cat off, and that cat gets put to sleep.
Okay.
So it's one or the other.
All right, fair enough. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today on Pets and Vets. Let's go to Kevin on the Northway. You're on.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, Kevin.
My question is, I have a wonderful 9.5-year-old Pyrenees Mountain Dog Border Collie mix, and we like to spend as much time on the mountains as possible hiking. I'm retired, so we get to do that a lot. Anyway, I've noticed in the last year or so, we used to be able to go out every other day, and there was no effects on her, but probably in the last 6 months or so, I'm refraining from taking her out every time because she seems to get sore, you know, muscle soreness or, you know, just fatigued. And I don't want to overdo it with her. So should I cut back on the hiking, especially in the warmer weather, or should I just keep going? And because she wants to go all the time.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering, what should I do?
Kevin, that's a great question. And I often tell my clients that dogs' hearts are bigger than their skeletons. In other words, their desire to go out and play and hike exceeds their joints' ability to be able to stay up and keep up with it without being incredibly achy afterwards. I think it depends on the state of your animal's joints and bones. Now, to the extent that your dog is more Pyrenees, 9.5 is pretty old. To the extent that your dog's a Border Collie, not quite as old. So the Border Collie at 9.5 very well could be in good enough condition and good enough shape to do that. And then if it's just some mild arthritis that the Border Collie has, the Pyrenees Border Collie, then some anti-inflammatories afterwards, just like I would take, just like we would take, might be good enough. It depends on what's causing it, Kevin. If it's some arthritis, I would say listen to your dog, see what makes him or her too achy afterwards. Use medications that would address if it's arthritis, and if it's something else, it would be nice to know. So you might want to consider some x-rays just to localize where's it hurting the dog and what could be done about it. I don't think that a priori 9.5-year-old dog should not go hiking. I do think from my own experience, though, when I did some of the high peaks in New York State, I took my dog up, and I forget if it was Gothics or whatever, there was a huge rock face, and it was steep. And I was wondering, like, what is this dog's paws gonna, or claws going to be able to grab hold of? And I was a little scared about that, that dog, my dog, could be tumbling down the mountain. So that gave me a little pause also. So you want to make sure that the surface that you're hiking is a good one that's appropriate for a dog's paws and legs.
Okay, yeah, well, this year my goal is to finish the Appalachian Trail in Massachusetts before I hit 65.
Nice.
Okay.
So I'm going to be cautious with her. She just had her 9-year annual checkup with our vet, and he did say she has a little arthritis in her front left leg to give her some glucosamine and chondroitin. And but he said, you know, she can still go hiking, but these last couple of hikes, she seemed to be a little bit more tired than usual.
Okay, so Kevin, I would recommend a little more than the glucosamine chondroitin sulfate. I think that's a great idea, but there are several other things that you could do to address arthritis besides that, which, by the way, a front leg arthritis is going to mean that the dog's going to have more difficulty going downhill, going back, than going up, okay? And the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, I would definitely recommend if she's healthy enough for it. That's like you or me taking Celebrex or ibuprofen. There are other things such as an injection called Ataquin, which is like a turbocharged glucosamine chondroitin sulfate. There's acupuncture, which is also very helpful, which I've used on plenty of arthritic dogs, and it helps them. Okay, and there are one or two other things. So talk it over with your vet to see if you could localize. You said that they said the left front. See what joint it is, just so you know what you're dealing with. Think about a picture, an x-ray.
Thank you, Kevin. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig. A worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies, and performance, newpaltz.edu/theatre. Interim Healthcare, for 46 years, offering in-home assisted living for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses serving the greater Capital Region, Columbia, and Saratoga counties and Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. And Nine Pin Cider, Albany. Hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room featuring New York cider, beer, wine, and spirits, Tuesday through Sunday, now available in Massachusetts, ninepincider.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. And the email address is voxpopwamc.org. And Ron, let's take care of a couple of emails before we get back to the phones. This one is from Matthew. I have a 12-year-old cockapoo who became hard of hearing all of a sudden. Is that normal? That's from Matt in Connecticut. Hard of hearing. 12 years old all of a sudden.
I don't think that it's normal, Matthew. 12 is not that old for a cockapoo, and for it to have happened suddenly does make me a little suspicious. So I had that today. I had a 12-year-old, actually, teacup, Yorkie, that also seemed to be losing hearing. And at first I thought it might be one of these selective perception things that the animal only hears its owner's talk when
it's
interested.
Yeah.
But she said no, it happened fairly suddenly over the next 6 months. I looked in the dog's ears to make sure there's no infection. If the dogs have an infection, which ear infections are common, then of course that crud in there is going to prevent the sound from getting through. I didn't see it in that dog's ear, and that dog is the same age, so I think that that dog might have something that would not be accounted for by age, and there might be something wrong. The problem is, Matthew, that to diagnose it, you need some complicated machinery, which regular vet practices don't have. I think it's called brainstem evoked response, in which electrodes are put on the head, and then a noise is made, and then you can tell whether the brain registers that noise. That's only at a teaching institution or some kind of tertiary place, and most people do not pursue it. At least have the vet look in the ears, Matthew, because it might just be a simple otitis.
Okay, fair enough. And this one is from Mattman, who says, can you recommend a good vet for Conure tropical birds?
Well, it ain't me, but there are colleagues that specialize in birds. There are some around. There's one on Upper Union. There's one in Voorheesville.
Okay.
There might be one or two others.
So there are a few around.
There's a few around, yes.
And how would you find that? Would you look under Yellow Pages?
Go to their websites. Go to their websites, and they'll tell you.
All right, this one's from JVBP. We have a 7-year-old, 15-pound indoor fixed mixed-breed male cat, which appears to be the epitome of glowing health. Because he hasn't been outdoors since he was 2, visits to a veterinarian have been non-existent. Is there any legitimate reason to take him in for a checkup or shots, for what, before he becomes symptomatic? And that's from JVBP.
JVBP, there are many, many legitimate reasons to take your animal in every single year. Not going outside doesn't mean that they can't get diseases, which could be shown up before symptoms show up. By the time a symptom shows up, then it's usually further along than if the animal gets a yearly exam and can find something earlier, something that a lay person's eyes won't necessarily pick up on, or something that you wouldn't pick up on without blood work. 7 years old, blood work is something that some people want to do, some people don't want to do, fine. But you see during the physical exam, JVBP, whether or not there is any indication for blood work. I'm kind of big on blood work because it shows stuff up way earlier than even my trained eyes can see. What are those kidneys doing? How are those electrolytes? Mm. You know, there are things like the white blood cell count being high that you wouldn't know by looking at the animal, or blood pressure. It's like a person with high blood pressure, JVBP. You don't know by looking at someone or in yourself that you have high blood pressure until something disastrous happens. So I totally recommend yearly exams. And even for an indoor cat, I recommend rabies every 3 years because bats get indoors. And don't think it can't happen to you. And even a distemper. I personally booster my distempers less often than most of my colleagues, but I still think an indoor-only cat should have at least a periodic distemper vaccine.
Okay.
And that's it. But the annual exams, I think, are definitely a must.
Fair enough. Let's go to Kate in Massachusetts. Kate, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Hi. Thanks for my call. I have two kittens that are brothers. I rescued them a week ago from a reputable rescue. They're 9 weeks old. One of them came with a respiratory infection, and the night that we got him, we realized that when he tried to meow, he did not make a sound, which is why we brought him to the vet. And when I called the rescue lady, she said that, oh, yes, we've never heard his voice. and he's the only one in the litter like that. The medication that they were on has been finished for a week, and he's very healthy, great appetite. But I will say, I'm also concerned that he has not had one bite of canned cat food. His brother is eating like a Viking, and this one covers it like it's something from the litter box. So I don't know if he can't smell or meow. I don't know what's going on.
What's he eating? Dry food? Kibble?
Well, right now they're eating the crunchy kitten chow, Purina kitten chow.
Okay. So although I do agree that canned food overall is better than dry food, it's healthier for animals, except for the convenience factor. If the kitten's eating the dry food, then he's getting the nutrition that he needs. If it's a reputable commercial kibble made by a company that you've heard, etc. As far as the voice, I got to wonder, a lot of these rescues, Kate, will have upper respiratory infections. Now, the so-called distemper vaccine that we use includes two viruses that do cause upper respiratory problems. And if it's a rescue animal, often they did not get protective antibodies from their moms. So the maternal antibody is not there.
The mom was with them until they were 8 weeks old, till the day I adopted them. The mommy was there. They nursed the whole 8 weeks.
Excellent. And you know that the mom is up to date on her own vaccines, her own distemper.
No, that I don't know.
So that's the question. I'm not saying it's the cause, but it's one thing I always consider in these rescue animals, that their maternal antibody levels are not protective as much as you would want them to be, in which case they could get not only the two upper respiratory viruses that are in the distemper vaccine, but other ones. Now, these things don't usually rob kittens of their voices. They usually cause more things like red eyes, runny nose, sneezing, that kind of thing. But who's to say that it didn't cause some kind of pharyngitis or some kind of tonsillitis that could conceivably have an effect on their voice? If you wanted to really check out the what I call the big guns that cause upper respiratory problems in kittens and cats, there is something called a PCR test. PCR is a fancy technology that stands for polymerase chain reaction for feline upper respiratory disease. And it only takes a swab in the back of the throat and in the eye, so it doesn't hurt.
Okay.
It's not difficult to do. And if you really wanted to pursue it, that would check the five or six big viruses that can cause upper respiratory, as well as two bacteria. Upper respiratory bacteria in cats are Mycoplasma and Chlamydia, and they're treatable. They're treatable with a doxycycline-like medication. So that would be something to pursue, but maybe even better than that would be looking down the throat, but you can't do that, Kate, without anesthetizing the cat. You just can't get down there on an awake animal.
Okay, Kate, thank you. We have to move it along here. Pets and Vets today with Dr. Ron Scharf. 800-348-2551 is the number. Andrea in Fort Plain is on. Andrea.
Hi, Doctor.
Hi, Andrea.
I have a four-month... Hello?
Hello.
Hello. I have a four-month-old pug, and in the morning, every morning, he runs to go potty outside. But during the day, he'll make mistakes. but I'm always asking him, do you have to go potty? We'll go out, and he'll go a little bit. We'll go inside, and then about a half hour later, I'll find a puddle.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well,
right now I'm walking him and I'm out of breath.
All right.
Okay, slow down.
Okay.
Take it easy. Have a seat. Andrea, pugs are stubborn and often want to do things the way they want to. Now, whether that's the case here, I don't know if the personality is a factor, but it's unlikely that a four-month-old has a bladder infection or a UTI. It's not out of the question, though. So one thing to make sure, if you want to drop a urine sample off at your vet's and make sure there's no UTI, like I say, unlikely but possible. Okay, number one.
Okay.
Number two, to talk about basic housebreaking. The ways that I like to do it, and you've probably heard at least some of this before, I personally recommend you take the dog to the same spot every time, use the same words, you say, okay, do business, or whatever words you want to choose. Now, I wait 3 or 4 minutes, no longer. If they don't do their business, personally, I go back in the house and give them another chance 10 minutes later because I don't want the dog to be training me for the dog to take as long as he wants doing his business. I think you get taken care of business first, then you play. Now, when they're in the house, I recommend that they should not be out of their crate unless they're attached to your wrist by a leash, meaning you catch them in the act every time. So when he does his business outside, you make a fuss. You make it's a big party. You give him a treat. What a good boy. What a good boy. You know, this kind of thing. So he learns that there's a payoff at the end of doing it at that bush after he hears those words. And if you catch him in the act inside and you start yelling in a convincing way in his face, and then he'll say, whoa, mom is displeased.
Yeah.
Eventually, if you're consistent about it, he'll get the message and he'll know that doing it outside is all good for his life and doing it inside is not as good.
Okay, I have caught him in the act, and I usually yell like, no, but I have a feeling he doesn't really know what no means yet.
Yes, yes, and
so,
I'm sorry.
I have a question on top of this one. What kind of punishment is appropriate? Is it a smack on the tush, or is he yelling enough? Or grab him by the back of the neck and kind of shake him a little? Or what's the punishment?
None of the above.
Okay.
None of the above. We don't use corporal punishment to teach dogs to do things because they're not getting the message that we assume that they are. Okay?
Okay.
And it gets abusive in a lot of situations. What you want to do is you need to convince a puppy that it is in their best interest to do things the way you want them to. And the way that you do that is with the positive reinforcement that I mentioned before about making the fuss and giving the treat when he does it where he ought and when he ought to. And then when you catch him in the act and you yell at him, the problem is, Andrea, that many women are too humanistic and they use too unconvincing a tone of voice. And they'll say, no, that's not a good boy. And that is worthless. That is worthless. You have to be low voice. You have to be in the dog's face in a convincing way and say, dut, 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 dut. Doesn't matter what your words are. It's the tone of voice and the volume. And you have to make sure that they understand. Now, although I don't think you should grab them by the neck, I do think that when you're doing that, you are advised to have them be held by their collar or a leash so that they don't run away from you, so that they don't have control of the situation in which you are trying to exercise instruction.
Okay. Andrea, thanks a lot for that one. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest today. Ken in Orange, Massachusetts. Ken, you're on.
Hi, how you doing, folks?
Hi, Ken.
Got a 9-year-old golden retriever, appears to be in excellent health. But somebody noticed, and I noticed it recently, his testes seemed to be like a little bit enlarged or big. Checked them out a little bit. Maybe a little bit too hard. There seems to be a nodule in one of them. Any idea about that at all?
Has the dog been looked at by a vet?
Oh, that was the next thing to do.
Yes, I would definitely do that. And if there's a nodule, Ken, I would neuter that dog ASAP.
Yeah, just to avoid the possibilities of cancer, right?
Yeah, I recommend that from early on, but 9 doesn't mean that he's too old to do it. If he's got testicular cancer, which they can get 3 different kinds of, then I think that those testes are better out of his body than in his body, so to speak.
Okay, well, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
So if a vet checks it out, maybe it reaffirms what you said, just get him neutered right away, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one of these instances, Ken, where I would cut first and ask questions later.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, I really appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
Ken, thank you. Over to, whoops, jeepers, creepers. I'm terrible on the old switch today. Rebecca in Kingston, you're on. Rebecca.
Hi, it's another incontinence question.
Ah,
I have
splendid.
A 15-month-old beagle puppy.
15 months?
Well, not a 15 months. I guess she's not such a puppy.
15 months, okay.
She's never been very good with toilet training, and she, you know, she's very stubborn. But the problem is occasionally she pees in the bed at night under the covers, and I've had her urine tested, I've had her poop tested, I've had her blood tested. But it seems to me that it's not voluntary if she's doing it under the covers while she's sleeping.
Yes. So what they can get, Rebecca, is an incontinence, a urinary incontinence, that is responsive to one of two medications. And it's good that you've done a urinalysis to rule out a physical cause like infections, things like that. Phenylpropanolamine, PPA, whose trade name is Proin, is the first thing you reach for. And the second thing, if that doesn't work, is an estrogen product.
Because I tried estrogen. It didn't work.
Really? Try the PPA. Yeah. I've always heard of the estrogen being used if the Proin did not work. But most cases of estrogen, most cases of leaking, this is a female dog, right?
Yeah, and it's not leaking. It's like a big puddle.
Well, how much is the dog drinking? Is the dog drinking too much water?
She does drink a lot.
Aha. Well, then we might be talking about kidney problem or other things that can cause the dog to drink more. Kidneys are not the only thing that will cause a dog to drink more. You know, they could have diabetes, they could have Cushing's, they could have several other things. But kidneys are one of the more common causes of a dog drinking too much. So the first thing you want to do, Rebecca, you could do this at home, is measure the amount of water that the dog drinks in a 24-hour period. Okay? All that means is, and I hope you don't have any other animals because that makes it a little
difficult.
Well, you would have to separate. You would have to segregate this dog in its own room or own part of the house if you wanted to quantitate her water intake. But it's an inexpensive, it doesn't cost anything, way to see is she drinking more than she ought.
Well, how much is normal?
Normal is comfortably less than an ounce for every pound.
An ounce a day?
Let me see if I got that right. It's less than the dog's weight in pounds in ounces. So if
per
they
day.
Weigh 60, yes, if they weigh 60 pounds, they should be drinking way under 60 ounces a day.
Right, she's 17 pounds.
So she should be drinking 15, 14 ounces a day or less. And if she's drinking more than that, she has a situation. And the situation could be correctable. And on the other hand, the situation could be something that's more challenging. But what you do is count the water, then go into the vet, get the dog examined, have some blood work taken, and then you find out if there's a physical cause for it. If there's a physical cause, then training will be of no avail. You have to take care of the physical situation. If you rule out the physical possibilities with an exam and blood work and a urinalysis.
Yeah, she's had blood work and she was fine.
Really? So all the numbers for the kidneys and everything were normal and a urinalysis was normal?
They wanted to do x-rays and the cost was a little prohibitive, so I didn't go ahead with that. But
well, x-rays or even
everything else.
Ultrasound might even be better than x-rays because you can see the inside architecture of the kidneys that way, as well as the other abdominal organs. 15-month-old is kind of a little on the young side for Cushing's, but ultrasound would also tell you what the adrenals look like in case they were big. That's a condition that'll cause the dog to drink more. Of course, diabetes would have shown up on the regular blood work as well as the urinalysis. So it's not sugar. There is another kind of diabetes called diabetes insipidus, which it could be. And lastly, something I don't know if it would fit in this because she's only doing it when she's asleep. I've never heard of a dog, Rebecca, that leaked while they were asleep that was not responsive to either the phenylpropanolamine or the estrogen.
It couldn't have anything to do with her being spayed when she was very young because she had an umbilical hernia.
It could, but there's been millions of dogs that have been spayed very young that don't get that.
Okay.
But if it were that, then it would have responded to the estrogen. Try the PPA, the Proin. And if the blood work's good and the urinalysis is normal, then if you had to pick one or the other, I'd go with an ultrasound before an x-ray.
Rebecca, thank you. We have to take a break here. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551. The number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts. Offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years. Boyden and Perrin.com. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. waterfront dining on their pet-friendly deck in the Hudson Valley, the1850house.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, breast augmentation, and laser and skin care since 1996, 518-786-1700. And Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans, hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, grapesandgrainswine.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It's, it's Pets and Vets today. That's what it is. Ron Scharf is our guest today. Our number is 800-348-2551. And, Ron, we're going to get back to the calls, try to do a lightning round here in the last 15 or 17 minutes. We'll do two quick emails before we do that. This one's from our buddy Jay, who said, "Did I just mishear the vets say to give dogs with arthritis NSAIDs? I've always been told that ibuprofen, like Advil, and acetaminophen, like Tylenol, are toxic for dogs. Can you please ask the doctor to elaborate on the kinds of medicines that can be used to alleviate arthritic pain in dogs?" And that's from Jay.
Okay, so the answer is that if they're the right NSAIDs used appropriately, Jay, that they're okay to use. It is the case that ibuprofen is not good for dogs. We don't often use Tylenol, but it's not toxic for dogs. It will kill a cat with one dose, though.
Wow.
But if we want to switch from one NSAID to another, we always do what's called a washout period. You give 5 to 7 days that they get neither, and during that time, you can give them Tylenol as a bridge. But there are NSAIDs that are made for use, labeled for use in dogs, and there actually is one that's labeled for use in cats, which we haven't had until recently.
Huh.
And if it's used correctly, you always want to give with a full stomach so it doesn't cause an ulcer, and maybe some periodic blood work to make sure it's not hurting them internally. They're fine. I would definitely use them.
This one is from Jill. "I have a male cat who's 14 years old. He was recently diagnosed with glaucoma and a torn retina and beginnings of kidney disease. He's taking 2 anti-inflammatory eye drops 3 times a day to reduce pressure. Our vet wants us to see an ophthalmologist to see if there is a way to avoid taking out his eye. He doesn't seem to be in pain. He does sometimes hide and keep his head down like he doesn't feel well. He has good appetite, drinks plenty of water. Do you recommend we pursue the ophthalmologist route or leave him alone due to age, etc.?" Again, a 14-year-old male cat.
And that's glaucoma, you said?
Glaucoma and a torn retina and the beginnings of kidney disease.
Okay. So in an ideal world, Jill, yes, I totally recommend going to an ophthalmologist. In real life, I still think it's good to go to an ophthalmologist, but usually you can't do anything really substantial with glaucoma. Sure, there are many medications. You might be able to help a little, but you're never going to get that eye normal. A glaucoma to eye can hurt. However, I've also seen cats with huge eyes, and they're not showing any pain at all. So I would be open to taking the eye out on a 14-year-old, but
you
ideally,
wouldn't be or would be?
I would be open to it.
Okay.
But ideally, you go to an ophthalmologist because they might be able to help.
Okay, let's go to Linda in Schenectady. Linda, you're on with Dr. Scharf.
Oh, hello. I have a cat question and a dog question.
Okay.
So the cat question is, how much water should my 10-pound cats, have a day?
Less than 10 ounces.
Less than 10 ounces?
That's
so
normal.
They never go to the water dish. They are on wet food.
Yeah, that's why.
And I usually add a tablespoon. Oh, so my other question is, I don't want to give them too much, so sometimes I add a tablespoon of water when I feed them, because I never see them use their water dish.
Yeah, it's the animals that are on dry food, Linda, that drink more water out of the bowl. And the animals on canned food, which I told another caller, if you want to look at on all health levels, canned food is pretty much better than dry food, except for the convenience of dry food. And one of the reasons that canned food is better is there's higher water content, so they don't get such a dilute urine, which can often cause crystals to clump in these animals that are predisposed to bladder situations.
All right, what's your doggy question?
So my dog question is, I have a dog with a cyst on his face, and the vet says it should be removed, and I'm just wondering, what causes a cyst, how serious is it, and how long can we watch it before we decide to do surgery?
Okay.
Sure. So there's many types of cysts, Linda, and there's also other things like growths and tumors. Do you know for sure it's a cyst? Because if it's a cyst that's not caused by a cancer is usually not something to worry about. However, I've seen cysts that were cysts because there's a cancer starting it off. And that's a situation that if you don't know what kind of cancer, I can't answer your question.
Okay.
You need to know what kind of cancer it is. Many, many growths, most growths, I would say, that dogs get on their skin are benign, okay? But that doesn't mean that they can't be malignant. Put a needle into it.
Okay, Linda, thank you. And over to Mark in Albany. Mark, you're on.
Hi, I have a question. I have a 170-pound Mastiff Rottweiler.
Yikes.
He's 14 and a half years old.
Whoa.
He's got a couple of issues. He's in good spirits, pretty decent health, except for his rear legs, and now he has some diarrhea or loose stool anyway. What can I give him for the loose stool?
Well, you give him the thing that's going to address what's causing the loose stool, Mark, and there are a million things that can cause loose stool. So first you want to figure out, are there any parasites in that? It's the first thing we always do. You drop a stool sample off at the vet, and you make sure it's not something simple like that. Then the next thing you got to look at is, could it be the food? So what you want to do with the food is feed him a very low-fat food, which means you boil up the chicken, skim off the fat, put some white rice, not minute rice or brown rice, one-to-one with the meat. Give them small amounts at a time. See if it has an effect on the stool. If it does, then you get him until his poops are good, and then you wean him back onto his regular food. If he goes loose again, it means he can't tolerate that food.
Okay.
If the low-fat doesn't do it, then you try hypoallergenic food to make sure it's not a food allergy. And if that doesn't do it, he might have an internal problem. He might have a gut problem or a liver problem, basically digestive tract problem. It could be liver, could be gut, could be pancreas. So you'd need to start doing a little digging.
Okay.
I've had him on rice and chicken for a number of weeks now.
What, white rice, boiled white rice?
Boiled white rice and boiled chicken.
Well, that's a good thing to do, and if that didn't do it, then that's crossed off the list, and you got on to go on to the next thing. Mark, I'm so impressed that you have a 14-year-old Mastiff Rottie. I mean, that is exceedingly old age.
Yeah.
Is he acting fine? His energy level for his age is good.
He seems okay. Everything seems okay except for his. I mean, he's got spinal stenosis,
right,
so he has trouble getting up. He has trouble sitting down.
His energy level is okay.
His energy level seems okay. He seems upbeat. You know, he still wants to play.
Okay.
You know, he just really
good.
Can't.
Now, last question is kind of gross. Is there any blood or mucus in the stool, like KY jelly type?
It seems to be maybe no blood, but maybe a little mucusy.
Okay. So mucus is a large bowel. That means colon. And it might even respond to something at home in which you use not only the low-fat food, but you use a high fiber in that food, whether it's bran, Metamucil. A lot of people like to use canned pumpkin. And sometimes we'll use a local acting antibiotic for a colitis. That's the name of a large bowel inflammation. But sometimes they'll respond to just the low-fat, high-fiber. So try that, small amounts at a time. If that doesn't do it, take them to the vet. Try to get some Tylan. Tylosin is the name of the antibiotic. And it might be something simple.
Okay, Mark, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf, our guest on Pets and Vets. Sue in Saratoga. Sue, you're on.
Oh, hi, good afternoon. I have a 9-month-old male boxer. And he, when he eats his food, he walks about and all the food falls out of his mouth. He won't stand to eat his food. He's so busy. I don't think there's anything anatomically wrong with his mouth, but I was wondering if this is a behavior that you might have some suggestions as to how I could keep him at his dish so the little tiny pieces of food aren't everywhere in the house.
Sure. So you know that his mouth is okay? He doesn't have any malocclusions or anything, Sue?
You know, yes, because he's been to the vet
good.
On a regular basis.
Okay.
And I told her about it. She checked his mouth, his teeth. Everything seems to be fine. But she had no suggestions either.
Okay.
So I was just kind of...
Either. I have a suggestion.
Your intelligence and maybe your experience and
yes.
years of practice...
So I would make sure that all the baby teeth fell out and that there's not some semi-loose teeth that are, you know, making it hard for him to closed down all the way. In other words, that his occlusion truly is good. And then what I would do, Sue, is use a puzzle bowl. You get a bowl that has all these bumps and interstices that'll make the kibble hard to get at, and it forces the dog to work at it, and that will mean that he'll get fewer kibbles in his mouth at a time, and that might allow him to not be so crazy to walk around while he's eating and be dropping kibbles out of his mouth.
Puzzle bowl.
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
You can actually buy a bowl that has that kind of a texture to it, huh? I should look for that somewhere?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good suggestion. I'll try that because he's just so busy. He doesn't want to stand still ever to even eat. So maybe that'll keep him engaged in working harder at the food and having to spend time there.
He's a busy boy.
I'll try it.
Good. Okay. Call us back and let us know if it worked, Sue.
Yeah, let us know.
And over to Matt in Middletown. Matt, you're on.
How you doing, Doctor? I have a 10, almost 11-year-old Doberman she's sort of riddled with problems these days. She has a lot of lumps under her skin. She's had a few of them removed. And she's got the older, large breed hip problems. But the last few days, she started having these, what I would describe as coughing fits. They're similar to the sound she would make right before she would throw up, but doesn't throw up. And this went on for like 20 minutes last night at like 1 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't do anything to stop it. It sounded like she was sort of struggling to breathe. Other than that, she still runs around and seems to breathe fine, but she gets in these fits, and I can't for the life of me imagine what would be causing it.
Okay.
I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
Sure. Has the dog been examined by a vet within the past year or so?
Oh, yeah. She's been in and out for her different issues.
Does she have a heart?
About 3 months ago.
She have a heart problem?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Dobies get a lot of cardiomyopathies, and that could surely cause a cough because when the pump is not working, then there's a buildup of fluid and that can make a dog cough if there's pulmonary edema. There could also be a left atrium pushing on the main stem bronchus. That could cause a cough. You might need it. I mean, 2 days is not that long. So if the dog's acting fine and eating fine, maybe you can go another couple days. But 20 minutes at 1 in the morning sounds to me like something that you want to probably check sooner than later. You might need an X-ray, Matt, just to make sure that there's no cardiac problem. And there are other things that will cause a cough, non-cardiac. There's lung problems. I mean, it could be a bronchitis or a pneumonia. Pneumonia is less likely if she's eating fine and acting fine. But there's many, many possible causes for cough. It could also be upper airway. It could be throat. So have her looked at by a vet.
Okay, Matt, thank you for the call. And we now go to Pat in Belchertown. Pat, you're on.
Hi. I have an 8-year-old Yorkie poodle that I rescued when he was 3 and a half. About a year and a half ago, he started being afraid of hardwood floors, and most of my house is hardwood floors. And my vet has suggested that I, because he wouldn't walk on them, so my vet suggested I put down area rugs, which I did. I bought several so that he always had a rug within a few feet. And I weaned him off gradually. And then he was fine. And now he's back to the, I won't walk on hardwood floors again. Is this something strange, normal?
It's not unusual, Pat. And what I have to assume is that there was an incident, okay, that a year and a half ago, it was slippery. One of the paws slipped out. The dog hurt himself and developed a phobia of hardwood floors. I think what you did previously after you weaned him off the area rugs was great, and it means that he's open enough to try to use the floor again. I would get at the area rugs again. What I would also do, though, maybe you don't even need the area rugs, if you can coax him onto the floor very little bits at a time. In other words, don't feed him unless he is having his food put on the floor, say, 6 inches in, okay? And then say he takes the food, and then you do that for a week or two, and then you try 12 inches in, and he does that for a week or two, and then you try a couple feet in, and then you gently coax him onto the deeper and deeper onto that hardwood floor until he sees that maybe he won't have a problem. Now, if he has a third problem, then it's going to be tough to talk him out of it, unless you use a lot of area rugs or booties on him, which is inconvenient. But they do make booties for dogs, like in the snow or, you know, leather bottoms or rubber bottoms or whatever.
Well, yeah, I tried that in the winter for him because he likes to walk in the cold, but he won't keep them on.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Is there something I can put on his feet to make them more tacky on his paws?
Okay, we're almost out of time. Go ahead.
The booties.
Socks?
Socks. You know, the socks that you get in a hospital that have little grippers on the bottom, maybe, but do they make them small enough for a, Yorkie poo? I mean, that's a tiny little, that's a sock that you get for a doll, you know, like that kind of thing. And then put your own, like, tabs on the bottom, like, not Velcro, but some kind of grippy semi-rubber things you could try. That might be something to think about.
Interesting.
How do you keep the sock on? I mean, you'd have to do it in a way that it was not too tight for his the health of his paw. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it. A surreal note to end the program.
Good Doggy luck with those paws, Pat.
Rubber socks on a dog. Dr. Scharf, thanks for being here, man. It was great. A lot of fun.
It was a lightning round the whole time,
Support comes from 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Newly renovated, providing local and seasonally inspired pup fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine. 20RailroadPublicHouse.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online marketing strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond. Since 1996, iMediaConsult.com. The Albany Pinebush Preserve, presenting opportunities to the Capital Region to engage in conservation science, lecture series, and citizen science participants, helping collect data and research, albanypinebush.org. And Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products and gifts, waterwheelvillage.com. Thanks again to Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna for being with us today. Thank you for listening and for the great calls and emails. Zach Malloy was our engineer today. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it is the Science Forum. Right now, though, stand by for news.